In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
So when does a fictional character, a great fictional character, like the one Daniel Day-Lewis played in Gangs of New York, remember him? Bill the Butcher. Hated immigrants, had knives. Was kind of brutal and frightened about change. When does a fictional character become a tool to stop lucid and important arguments and discussion about American sovereignty, American borders, American culture, and what do we do with millions of illegal or undocumented immigrants? It happens when Bill the Butcher becomes president of the United States, at least in the minds of many Americans. And Trump's commentary last week comparing African and some Central American nations and Haiti to shitholes, and then saying Norway was an awesome place, is part of that now, isn't it, Jeff Carlin?
Unfortunately, it is. I don't understand. I do understand, but I get the idea that the president would the thought behind it, and there's no doubt that myself and probably everybody I know has said something stupid and insensitive about someone less fortunate.
Well, I think a lot of people have used the word shithole.
Yeah,
to refer to countries where there's third world, if you've been to some, and don't tell me you've been to a third world country because you went to an all-exclusive resort and raised your hand and some kid put a frozen daiquiri in it when you didn't even look at him.
Right.
You know, I'm talking about, you know, there are places I've been.
Sure.
British Guiana, Suriname, Nigeria, the country where I got sick in Wari. And for him to say that, I understand why he's saying it, but I also understand why it's so important for the left to take what he said and use it as a cudgel against anyone who would want to talk about immigration issues that differ with what the left wants to talk about. And so we're in a thing of what words can you say? Can you say a stupid word in America? What if he had said those deplorables? Why are we having those deplorables? What if he said wretched refuse, which is on the Statue of Liberty? Give us your wretched refuse. Wretched refuse means terrible garbage, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a story about a little plumbing issue. When my grandfather came to this country, Greeks were not allowed to sleep indoors in Chicago.
Jeez.
They had to sleep in the barns. And a few years earlier, the Irish had not been allowed to, you know, weren't treated well either in every group. Germans too, sure. I guess, every group. So it was his turn, and he had $5 in his pocket, and after 10 years or 20, he made good money. He had his own businesses, 10 trucks selling vegetables throughout the South Side, which is a lot better than how he started, which was like a hamali carrying crates of strawberries on his back.
Jeez.
By himself, sleeping in a barn. My grandmother learned midwifery at Hull House.
Wow.
Right? And she learned how to can vegetables and fruits at Hull House. So when they went back, because they never wanted to be, they just came here to work, and then they went back. No welfare, by the way.
Right.
No one gave them a link card when they came here.
Hadn't been invented yet.
Nobody said, hey, you're an immigrant, so can you just vote Democratic, and I'll give you a political job or welfare card. He went back to the old country, to Greece, and had money, lost it all in a economic collapse of the drachma. But before he lost it, he built a house and had a little like grocery store, post office thing in the cafeteria in the first floor, and he built he had the first house in the village that had plumbing. And that was like, oh my God, sure. I don't think you're real. They called my grandmother the Americanida. Any of my family listening to this, you know these stories. And because, that's why he named the mule Truman.
Right.
That we had. Because he loved America. But when the toilet was built in a place that was called a shithole by Americans of the time.
Right.
People of the village, the most beautiful village in the world, the one that has the spring that I'll tell you about later up above on the mountain. People of the village came, knocked on the door, and said, could we see? To see the water go down.
Witchcraft.
Amazing. You who are so wise in the ways of science. All I'm saying is Trump is a jerk for what he said.
Mm-hmm. Un-American, I'd say.
I think he doesn't. He understands why people are worried about immigration. And Durbin and Gutierrez and others who are writing about this understand how to derail the discussion by using Trump's nonsense against him and against those who would have a discussion. Because you can shut him. He's Bill the Butcher. You could isolate Bill the Butcher. Put him in a box. Put Bill the Butcher in a bag. Light it on fire. Throw it away. The problem is there's tens of millions of people who are concerned about where their country is going and how it's getting there.
Yeah.
And if you can't talk about it, I don't know, Jeff.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the logic of the president's statement holds up. There's no doubt. I mean, why would you want people from a terrible place, even if it's terrible for whatever reason? Why would you want to burden yourself by taking them in? I mean, there's logic to that. That's essentially what he said.
Yeah, but he's wrong there too. I'll tell you why. This whole talk about merit. Mm-hmm. We need engineers. We need
right.
We need engineers, and I understand. If you took the politics out of this, we could solve this immediately. Mm-hmm. The 11 million that are here, you can stay here. No one's going to deport you. You can have permanent work visas or whatever. You stay here. You're not voting, and you don't get welfare. But if you want to work, you can stay. How's that? And the DACA kids, you can stay too, and you can go to school and do what you want, but you're not getting money to go to college over some, like a Mexican-American electrician working, and he has four kids, and he went through did everything the right way, and he's got four kids to feed and educate. You're not going to be put in front of that guy for political reasons, so Dick Durbin or Gutierrez can have a boost and have power. It's not going to – see, I want to work it out where you can work it out without politics. But with Trump saying what he's saying and the way people are jumping on it, you can't.
Yeah, the whole thing is a mess. There was
– will it be forgotten by the time this podcast runs? Will there be some other outrage?
I'm sure there will.
War or something?
I'm sure there will.
Right.
That's just the nature of the world we live in at the moment. I mean, that's the number one thing I hear from publicists and assistants to guests and stuff. We have people coming in. You name them.
On the radio show.
Yeah. I mean, we have just it doesn't matter. An ambassador or an author.
What do they say?
they ask, how do you keep up? They all ask it. How do you keep up?
Keep up what?
Keep up with the news. Keep up with what the president does, because the president is 24/7 doing something different, you know, something either having him, you know, saying he's an absolute genius in one breath, and then saying countries that are shitholes don't deserve to come here, have their people come here in the next breath. And it's just breakneck speed.
It's exhausting, right?
Right. And
part of that, though, Jeff, is the fact that he's been tasked with kicking the establishment in the crotch.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is the media hating on him before mm-hmm. he was the average exhibited any of this, because they're of the left,
mm-hmm.
which they are. And part of it is that those who hate him the most don't hate him for his Republican or conservative policies, because I don't know
doesn't
if he
has
is,
any.
But because he's an anti-establishmentarian, and they, meaning us in our business, are of the establishment. That's what we do.
Mm-hmm.
We are the voices of the establishment, whether we know it or not, and we protect it, whether we know it or not. So all that together is exhausting,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
It is. It is, and it's, I don't know, and it just doesn't, I mean, you see it in everybody. I mean, I know Kristen's coming on later, and I'm sure she feels the same way about this. It's just really tiring. It's oh, woe is me. That's fine. But it seems like we're going in so many different directions, and that there's just this president is just very scattered in his ability to do things. I feel like it's,
well, I don't know. You have that. You have like the PR stuff with everyone screaming at him.
Yeah,
they were calling him a madman. Then he had a meeting, put it on TV. He and Democrats and mm-hmm. Republicans, and he ran the meeting very well. And then all of a sudden, they weren't calling him a madman anymore. Then he says the shithole thing. Then it's another hysteria.
Right.
Then it's like, oh my God, you're a racist. Oh, da, 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 da. And all the screaming and the yelling, right? When Democrats, if they do get their person in, beware that all this kind of behavior won't stop now.
Right. Now right? It's just a new norm.
It's not. You're not going to tell conservatives, hey, no, we have to respect the office. There's not going to be any of that.
No. I mean, the respect for the office, you know, it started to dwindle with Kennedy and the, well, you know, there's always rumors about infidelities and things
Clinton,
like that.
Clinton, for sure.
Well, but right. Nixon. But I'm saying then it built up to Nixon, and then you had.
And then Clinton.
And now, you know, it's essentially completely been obliterated by the red hair in chief. So I don't know.
Bill the Butcher. Did Bill you like Butcher. That movie?
I did.
Do you see where it goes?
Oh, yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
Because the Irish were hated.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Greeks were hated. And the Poles were never really given. There are Poles in this town should have been mayors, but they didn't have. Political leadership. The Italians lynched in New Orleans and elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. But you know right. who wasn't hated, even though he probably was, but he was hated, at least in a respectful manner, was Milt Rosenberg, who we lost last week. And I just wanted a hat tip to him, because he was somebody who did it regardless of your political views. I mean, he was a conservative. Many people didn't like, you know, his conservative views.
God, if he was a lefty like Studs Terkel, you'd have all the media wringing their hands and tearing their garments and pulling their hair and bemoaning. But I have to tell you, thank you for mentioning that, because while just before you said it, I was thinking, we got to have a segment on Milt. He was a brilliant man who ran the best, most literate, mm-hmm. smartest radio program in the history of our country.
Yeah.
He would have Henry Kissinger, the presidents, the top authors.
Carl Sagan.
Carl Sagan. One day you could have listened to Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg and be treated to a discussion of Chaucer
mm-hmm.
and readings in Old English. And the next day it could be Larry Schreiner and Milt talking about the humanity of like the weather and politics, or murders. I've been on his show, and I can tell you the two people that I've been interviewed by that I really respect are both gone. Milt Rosenberg and John Calloway. And they were just outstanding.
Yeah.
Because they focused your mind.
Mm-hmm.
They focused the mind of their guests. And it became a dialogue rather than a performance.
Right. And, you know, I was obviously a young kid when I first heard him, as many people are, and I listened to, I mean, every night, you know, it was on at my house, and I have distinct memories of, you know, shoveling the driveway with my radio in my ear, listening to Milt Rosenberg talk, you know, Russian philosophy, and, like, that was my first introduction, really, to, like, the concept of developed Russian literature. I mean, I had no idea. I thought all the literature was American or English, right. You know, and...
Gogol, Dostoevsky.
Right, exactly. And to get that, but it was amazing that Milt Rosenberg could step into an interviewer and he would be able to crack the door on a person's mind and walk in and explore their mind from across the table. And you could hear it in people's conversations with him when they would talk, and you know, there was this awe and wonder about the questions they were being asked about, things that they didn't even think about or that they were thinking about but never really came to the surface when they were talking about what their work or their study or their passion or whatever it was. And it was amazing to listen to Milt Rosenberg and do it with such panache and such, you know, intelligence and such a sense of humor that was dry, but playful and so intelligent. I mean, on another level that you just don't see
anymore.
Not
just big words, speaks French in italics.
Right.
The way he would flip arguments or mm-hmm. his favorite counterfactuals.
Right.
Right. Oh, how could history have changed if so-and-so, if Rousseau, if John Cass had been able to get in a time machine and strangle Rousseau in his crib? Which I would have in a second.
Sure, sure, sure.
Although I'm against, you know, violence. But hypothetically speaking,
right.
Things like this, he would, he was just, I tell you, Jeff, you focused your mind
mm-hmm.
in such a way that when you came out of that, you needed a drink. And usually,
decompress.
For yeah. Milt, it was a martini.
Yeah.
And, it was so nice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Scott Stannis was a good friend of his, and Betty and I, Scott and Janine and Milt and his wife had dinner a few times, and I've been on his show many mm-hmm. several times. I met Tom Bevan on his show.
Yeah.
That's where I met Tom, on the show. Young fellow from Princeton. But the way he... Now, did WGN do... because we were so busy with news and writing my column and cleaning my desk and throwing away my artifacts. did WGN do a thing?
Yes.
Like a retrospective?
They did a three-hour tribute to him from 8 to 11.
Could we hear that somewhere?
Yeah, you can check it out on WGNRadio.com. Justin Kaufman hosted it.
Oh, see? There you go. The next Milt Rosenberg.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Long format. And so it was good. They did a great job with it. You should check it out. There's the best part of it.
My interview with him?
I don't know. I didn't include that. I might not have made it.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of people looking back and talking about him, but the best was just cracking through archival stuff and just hearing his voice. It brought back so many good memories, and you know, it really almost made me feel like I'm in a point in my life where I spend so much time trying to digest what's happening in the world that I don't spend enough time just in awe and wonder of the world and a point where I can think about things and think of them to the depths that Rosenberg would make you do. I mean, talking about whatever, but to open your mind up and really kind of push your level of understanding of what, you know, the world is and what it is to be human or whatever it may be.
He expected more from people than they gave,
mm-hmm.
particularly in our business. And I don't think he was very happy with sort of the banality
mm-hmm.
of newspapers and broadcast in the recent years.
Yeah.
He did not like vulgarity.
No.
He did not like...
Although he holds the lead, I think, if I have to look up the numbers, but the number of times someone has sworn on WGN radio. And he's the only person I've heard swear more than a few times. He was one of the guys where, you know, the mic would come back on, or they would be a little earlier. He'd be missing something, and you'd hear the occasional swear. But it was always elegantly sworn.
Yes, of course. And it was done in that beautiful baritone.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, did we say he was not a big fan of certain writers in town? If he had been a man of the left, this whole town would have been, there would have been retrospectives and magazine pieces, et cetera, like there were for Stud Sterkel, who was far of the left. Milt was not. He was on the other side. And so that tells you something about how he was treated and how he is remembered. But everyone who listened to WGN Radio, and WGN Radio was better for
absolutely
a man like that.
Absolutely.
And remembering him, Jeff, do you think that when we think of Milt Rosenberg and we're talking into microphones, that we kind of, not that we can, but that we kind of want to do better?
Absolutely. Ourselves? Absolutely.
My guests are two of the most interesting guys working at the Tribune. John Cass is known to everyone, Cass of the Tribune, whose columns are one of the few resources to help keep this city more or less honest, or at least honest about what's wrong with it. My other guest is Liam T.A. Ford, who is a reporter on the Urban Beat. In fact, he started at the paper working with John Cass, but went on to his own full career and fully endorsed and endowed as one of the major journalists covering Chicago. And he is, incidentally, the author of a new book titled Soldier Field, A Stadium and Its City. We'll talk about that as we proceed tonight. But right now, I want to offer you, John always likes a classical quotation, so here's nothing. Yes. This is not from the Romans or the Greeks.
As long as you don't speak in ancient Greek.
No, this is merely from the Victorians.
Oh.
Elizabeth Barrett Browning. You remember her famous sonnet, How Do I Love Thee? Let Me Count the Ways. The question I raise is, speaking about Chicago and Illinois politicians, how do I rob you? Let me count the ways. Will somebody give me a rundown of all the ways that you can take money that's supposed to be put into public use and get it into private pockets? There must be a list of some 10 or 15 different ploys.
Okay. Milt and Liam have a restaurant. Okay.
Yeah.
And I want to have a restaurant and knock you guys out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm in with the right crowd, right? Usually people that look like they need a shave at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Inspectors will visit your place and come and go through the inspect the building code, which I think is about what, 3 feet thick now?
Yeah, it's getting thicker every day.
And find what you don't, what you need, and lard it on and nail you and bang you and regulate you, right? And basically bleed you. So there's all sorts of...
And they can knock you out of business then.
Knock you out of business, sure. Which is why business people keep their mouth shut, which is why most people keep their mouth shut, which is why when you find someone who doesn't keep their mouth shut, you know, usually they should be a columnist.
Now, how do I rob you? Let me count the ways.
So, Kristen.
Hi, John.
Kristen McQuarrie, our spiritual sister of the Chicago Way. Jeff, isn't it nice to have Kristen back here?
It is great to see Kristen. Happy New Year, Kristen.
You weren't supposed to say that.
Is that the rule? I heard the rule is the 10th of the year.
Okay.
But I see, you know, if this is the first time I've seen you this year, I think it still works.
I think so, too.
As long as it's not February.
I think
this month.
And I still have my Christmas decorations up outside, so I'm one of those
Me
people.
Too, yeah.
So it's still sort of Merry Christmas / Happy New Year.
Yeah, absolutely. At my house.
When did Jesus leave? When did they leave Bethlehem?
I should know this, but I don't.
To.
I know. I'm
okay,
sorry.
Okay, sorry, my Christian friends.
Bad Catholic here.
Anyway, okay, so you're here now.
Yeah.
What's new in your life?
Happy New Year. I need an escape from politics, and I just can't, in this job, get it. But I just feel like every day, there's something
right.
Exhausting.
We are living in a dysfunctional state. You wrote a brilliant column a short time ago on the deniers of the Exodus.
Right.
And I'm sure you got... I tweeted it and I put it on social media.
Thank you for doing that, because it really, the response I got because of you doing that was, just hundreds and hundreds of people. And I try to, write a little note back, but there are a lot of people on the brink of leaving, feeling stuck, or who left. And so we're, sending me email from Colorado and Texas and Florida and... And it's frustrating, because when Trump at the national level does things like he did with the, can I say the shithole comment? I guess it's everywhere.
Yeah,
so
I don't like using it, to tell you the truth. I'm going to, I wrote about it this week, and I struggled with whether to use it or not. But yeah, that's what he said. That's what we're.
He said it, and just all of the. It makes it harder, I think. It's going to make it so much more difficult to have a breakup of one-party control in this city, in Cook County, and to have Republicans win some seats in the legislature at the state level because of things like that Trump does. I do think it's going to have a trickle-down ballot effect. And, with all of the Exodus talk and people wanting to leave... 2018 is a big year for Illinois, and it's disheartening that the president can't show some discipline. And I don't have expectations that he can. But every once in a while, even though I try to defend his voters, and I try to walk a middle line, because I understand
his voters are all racist. That's the consensus that I read.
Of course, that's what people say. But it's not
establishment media that I know very well. That if you're of Trump. Voter, you're a racist.
Which, of course, is not true. But then every once in a while, he gets me worked up too.
Okay, so the shithole comment really bothered you, right?
It did.
And
it's personal to me.
And you never knew anyone who used it to mention any country? Because, I have a little history of, I've used the word.
It's not the word, John. It's not the word. It's the fact that he could be so stupid in that room to reference poverty in that way, to scorn people from poverty-stricken nations like Haiti,
right.
Where I've been, and where my dad is going in a couple weeks.
Word. Where people are really hurting, and in Port-au-Prince, they don't even have sewers. They have... people that go, I'm told, go to collect the night soil at night. This is how poor the country is.
Right. And so for him to just make a flippant remark, it's not the word. Right. I talk like a truck driver. It's not the word. It's not the characterization even. It's the scorn of third world conditions. And why would we want to accept more people from those countries? To me, that is just...
And
that's too ignorant for me to just try to defend and justify and twist and do all the things that I think journalists like us who try to be a little more middle of the road do. Mm-hmm. I'm not doing that with him this time.
And what strikes me is that the reaction, there's two kinds of reaction to his horrible, I compare him to Bill the Butcher, okay? When would a fictional character, this was the lead I was working on, when would a fascinating character like Bill the Butcher from Gangs of New York be able to derail an important discussion on American sovereignty, its borders, and immigration? When Bill the Butcher becomes president of the United States. Because that's how he's being... His commentary, which is stupid, and comparing it to Norway, right? That's the problem. You have the white Nordic people and the shithole people that he talked about. That gives the Democrats license and opportunity to derail meaningful discussions on sovereignty and borders and Dreamers or DACA and all the rest of it. And his clumsiness allows this to happen. I'm not defending him either. But I look at it as, I think it's reprehensible for a president to speak in that context when he's talking to senators. It's not like guys at the end of the bar where John's telling the story, or in the newsroom, John's telling the story of when he was in Nigeria and he almost died as a young man, as a sailor on a merchant ship. Because I had to put my boots on in the hospital to use the toilet facilities. But that's guys talking. That's not the president putting in the discussion of immigration policy. And to me, that's reprehensible on so many levels. To compare Norway, in other words, the white people are good, but I don't want these brown people, number one. Number two, allowing people then to change the debate so that if you don't come out and attack him, you then yourself are racist,
mm-hmm.
which I find to be a fascinating tactic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because what that's about is there are witless people who say that and write that, who just speak with emotion, and then there are calculated ones like Louis Gutierrez and Dick Durbin, who understand the power of this formulation and use it to alter policy, right?
Yeah, I mean it's going to impact our lives in especially elections here. I think it's going to be very difficult for Republicans because he says things like that, and as you're saying, it galvanizes the Democratic base. It is. I mean, that type of remark to me is indefensible. It's just
the guy called himself a genius. And for a genius, he's making it really hard on himself to do anything of value. I mean, he had a lot of momentum after that meeting on Monday. I mean, I know it was
when he wasn't mentally ill.
Sure, but when
CNN was praising him, they were cutting live.
I was captivated. I watched the whole thing. I couldn't pull away from it. I thought it was really interesting to see, the inner workings of two parties who clearly disagree on something.
Lucid
discussing. Hey, this is we want this, but we really want that. And it was an amazing insight into what our country can do and how we can function and represent the people. But then he nukes it with this stuff, and it's the Twitter. The Twitter stuff is driving him to do things outside of a controlled system. You know, if he's working with people and people are watching it and it looks great, and then they're coming through with great plans for our country, awesome. But he nukes it with this stuff.
But you guys are both addressing the sort of drama of it. There's an underlying issue, mm-hmm. which is two, I think. Number one, should we have borders? Can a nation exist without borders? Can a nation exist by having a politic where people who break the law and enter the country illegally are put on welfare and then, or offered welfare, and then enticed to vote for one party or another? And then how does the other party respond? All these are difficult questions to deal with. And the second one is, these are important discussions, but what are we talking about? Words that can't be said. We can't say words. Certain words you can't say. That's the one problem with the left. They draw like parentheses around what, or they define what can and cannot be said. They're the definers of it. Yes, it's vulgar and ugly. But this is America. We have the right to say what we want. We have the right to condemn what we hear, but we also have the right to say what we want. And there seems to be an effort on the left to control the terms of discussion. And when you do that to a president who's a vulgar boor, as I've written and you've said and we've all said, that's one thing. But when you tell that to 40, 50, 60 million people, when you tell them this is, you cannot think this way or say this thing or discuss it in your terms, what you do is what? What happens when you tell them that?
I think they have a right to have a civil conversation about this without the president of the United States acting like an ass. I mean,
right.
Like I said, it's
exactly,
not the word, it's not the verbiage, it's not that he's being vulgar. It's that you can have a conversation about border security and welfare reform, and people like John Kasich have done it in Ohio, where he has discussed the need for able-bodied people to work, and that it's a gift to provide work for people, and at the same time you have the Trump administration trying to make some reasonable changes to Medicaid, that if you want to continue on Medicaid, you have to, if you are able-bodied, you have to take steps to work or take classes or go to school. I think those are reasonable policy changes that probably need to be done in this country. And there's a compassionate way to frame that argument and to bring people into your corner. And then there's the Trump way, which is completely counterproductive when you are trying to push policy change, because he looks like he has no empathy and actually just totally ignorant of the conditions in some of these countries. I mean, just a few weeks ago or a month ago, he was saying that Haiti was fine. Haiti had returned to normalcy, and therefore we needed to
right.
lift the amnesty program that had blah blah blah.
Because he needed chambermaids at Mar-a-Lago.
The inconsistency. So Haiti's fine.
Right.
But then it's not. It's mm-hmm. it's a shithole. I mean, look. I've been there. It is parts of it garbage strewn, because the government has absolutely no money, or it's completely corrupt.
There's no industry that's
there's no
usable.
Industry. The people are literally trying to, in some of these communities,
just
trying
to survive.
And
there's no water to drink.
There's no water to
no
drink.
No fresh water to drink.
The volunteer organizations in the United States and around the world have done more to help the Haitian people with housing and food and fresh water than their government can provide for them. So just all of this combined into his statement, it's just more of a window into his stupidity, and to me. And that's the difficulty with why I'm worked up today.
And it does... Okay, look at just how the practical use of it. There is a possibility, and I've held this for a long time, that Governor Rauner may lose the primary. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm told that he won't. He's got too much money, et cetera, et cetera. But if Jeannie Ives does beat him in the primary and the election goes national, then all this anti-Trump stuff will be used against her. No?
Of course.
Oh, yeah. She even said that she aligns herself to the president because that's good for her state, which our governor has refused to do. And that's going to be a fault against the Democrats are going to see in her. And it's an unfortunate fault because, that's how federal government works. They're not going to help you out. The president's not going to help you out. They're not going to be your friend. And you got to be that way. And she's definitely going to get pounded by that. But I don't think it's fair. But
to Kristen's point about how he complicates everything for Republicans in Illinois.
Yes.
At a time when, let's face it, we're going down the tubes, boys. I don't want to say we're a shithole state, but people are leaving. Well, all right, can we get off politics for a second?
Yes, please.
All right,
please,
so,
I'm begging you.
Okay, so what then? What else is there?
So tell me about, I haven't caught it, I'm sure you've talked about this already, but are the boys still home or are they gone or back to school?
One's back to school, the other's home.
Okay, and I love your annual, is it your annual Christmas picture where the table is going from one end of the dining room all the way into the living room?
Table.
I know, but not with the extension. That is a big table. You have, I don't know, 40 people sitting around that table.
Love them. There's two. There's one table, and Betty takes all the whatever leaves.
Leaves.
She put, and then there's another table that we put next to it.
Okay.
That's the table that she has to yell at the boys, bring it upstairs. And they're like, oh, come on, Mom, another game. We're just playing another game. And then there's another table after that. So
yeah.
We had a bunch of... Should I not put that? I don't know.
No, I love it. I think it's so...
Okay? I mean, I don't want to act like, I know that there are people, I have gotten this
from colleagues who say,
oh, people are hungry. Why are you talking about food? I don't mean to be.
Oh,
like
my
that.
Gosh. No, that's silly. No, it's a beautiful family picture. And it's just think it's original in that not that many family. You know, we have to split up into five or six different tables.
Because you're so big?
We just don't have that. Oh. We don't have the room, and we don't have the tables.
Yeah.
So just the fact that you're all sitting around the table, and, you know, you're Greek.
Oh,
so it
hand.
Comes with all the...
That's why the net, and, of course, the traditional Greek dish is a French onion soup and beef.
You know what I still think about, John?
What?
The meal that we had at John's house. I mean, it was phenomenal. I think about each and every dish, but I've tried to recreate and haven't figured it out yet.
What?
I think it was like a Greek yogurt dill salad dressing.
Yeah, that was
with
good.
Fresh dill.
We should have
your mom made it, though. I thought your mom.
It was outstanding.
There was no yogurt in that salad.
Oh, no?
No, it was it's called the Megalis salad, and it's named after Nick Megalis, my brother Nick's father-in-law. He owns a place called the Chateau Ritz Banquet Hall in Milwaukee.
Oh,
and
the Chateau Ritz.
Yeah, I know, right? It's a great... I don't know why people don't get... I'm not pitching for Chateau Ritz, but people get married, and, you know, these kids today,
yeah,
and they get married, like, at a fancy hotel downtown, spend a lot of money, and then they get kicked out at 11 o'clock. Where if you go to a banquet hall like that, especially one that like that that has great food...
Oh, for sure.
You can stay late, and they might know somebody in the, you know, village that lets you stay.
Oh, they can push that permit a little bit later.
Sure.
Yeah, so there's no after hours, because,
so
yeah, you definitely get... Yeah.
It's a little olive oil.
Okay.
Dill, salt, pepper, and I forget, a little lemon maybe or something.
Oh, see, I thought it was creamy. I thought it had a creamy base, but it was more oil.
I don't know. I haven't gone over my menu notes from the dinner.
It was
Chef's Table.
Delicious.
Right. I love that show.
So we had a little... we had about 5.5 days of no cable, internet, nothing.
Oh, man.
We have AT&T.
And you survived?
We survived, but, I mean, it was a giant experiment to have. I mean, it was over Christmas break, so the kids were home.
Is this like you did this on purpose?
No. It just went out, and it was kind of spotty.
Oh, bleep. And all the kids were like, we can't get
out. Oh, it was just torturous at first.
Yeah.
Then you sort of get used to it. Then you get angry. And I was texting back and forth with neighbors who also had the same situation. But just the amount, the need to come up with imaginative activities. It was actually quite lovely. But
I bet.
Not maybe by the fifth day. A lot of games.
Board games like Risk?
Yeah, we played some board games. Yeah. We played Jenga.
What's that? Oh, the
blocks.
The stack of blocks.
Yeah. Isn't that nice? Sitting around. Did you have like hot chocolate with little marshmallow bits?
I don't think we did hot chocolate, but
it was also
the tundra, you know, super cold those few days.
Yeah.
So nobody wanted to leave the house. We also played this game where of a restaurant, you had to open the refrigerator and put together a little menu and try to make meals out of leftovers, and the kids participated in that too.
That's a great game for mom.
It was very little house on the prairie.
To write or the editorial to write.
I know. I worked during most of it, but my husband was home with the kids, so that was interesting.
Did they learn about how to make soups? Because that's the only real soup. People say I make soups, not like me. I go to the butcher shop, buy stuff, you know, spend a gajillion dollars. No, the way to make the real cook, not me, opens a fridge, sees what's in there, and makes a soup.
It's called son of a bitch soup.
There you go.
Every son of a bitchin' thing in the kitchen goes. No, we made key lime pies. That was one thing we made a couple of times.
Jeff is swinging over there.
Yeah. They were delicious.
Very nice.
But that was my excitement.
So what is your crust?
I'm sad to say I use store-bought.
That's okay.
I use store-bought, but we used fresh-squeezed lemon.
Right?
I know. Listen, my pie will never compare to your pie.
I don't remember what pie that is that you would compare that to.
Well, the berry pie that he brought to your house, where it was, I mean, a noticeable homemade crust with the woven topping.
Yeah.
I mean, That is some real dedication.
Yeah, it's so long ago, though, that I don't try.
Oh.
To be fair, John, you have had two of my pies. I didn't make.
I've had a slice of your. I didn't have. I haven't. Had, you know, like that bourbon pie that Jeff talks about.
I don't remember. Lauren Cohn and I had that pie.
Yep. You've had three pies.
Oh, because now I threw that one.
I forgot about
three
that.
Three pies in 10 years. Great.
So, John, are you by? Since you mentioned that you forgot our menu.
Uh-huh.
Are you having any issues with memory as you're aging? I'm just curious.
I can't remember. I hope not. Why?
I mean, I'm just.
Should I take some supplement?
Maybe you should take some brain food.
Yeah, like what? Raw fish?
Good sushi? I think like fish oil.
Salmon. Mm-hmm. Salmon's fish oil. And
they say garlic. Tablet. Yeah.
What's wrong with just garlic?
You can just take garlic, but garlic has the stinkiness, if you will, out
listen,
of it.
Guys,
and it's potent, super potent.
I'm not taking any of these bleeping pills or bleeping supplements.
Yeah, I know.
I hear them on the radio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some of them sound like just the big fat bleeping lie, mm-hmm. You know? Like, I have a terrible disease, terminal, but I had your vegetables smashed up in a pill, and the next thing I know,
I'm free of disease.
I picked up three 19-year-old chicks in Vegas, you know? Right? I mean, come on.
Some of them are. It's surprising the FCC crack down on them. No, but I'm getting over a cold, and I tried the whole zinc thing because I cannot miss work. I'm in the middle of endorsements. I have back-to-back candidate meetings. So I started taking zinc as soon as I do think it shortened the cold is my point.
Zinc. Can't you just kind of like get like a
chew on a nickel?
Nickel and just, grate it. Grate it with a little lemon zest.
Sure.
In your tea.
Olive oil.
Yeah, I'm sure they recommend that.
For a while.
Put on a slice of bread.
I usually just get a gallon of orange juice and then I drink it and then that's my
fix.
Then
you wonder why you can't lose weight with a gallon of orange juice?
Well, that too. But I get the 50-50, the low sugar. That stuff's good.
Okay.
But does it lose? It loses its potency from the moment it's squeezed.
Oh, yeah.
You know this, Mr. Science. No, I haven't taken those, but I think I should. Like,
I mean, but
ginkgo provera or something?
So, like, you're using your brain every day so that, you know, you're exercising.
Sudoku helps.
Readers told me that I should probably be taking something.
Readers tell us lots of things, don't they?
You get those little digs. Like,
all over today.
But it's you haven't written about that. You haven't written, like, you haven't made a shtick out of comments that you get.
No, I don't write enough to do. I like when you do your reader feedback, but I don't write columns on Facebook, though.
I don't do reader feedback.
Oh, you don't do columns anymore of feedback?
Readers?
I thought readers just
pick stuff that they hate.
Yes.
And as long as it's not me, and I think it's funny, I'll include it.
Okay.
Know? Like, I'm sure people are going to give a mutza to, I don't know. Okay, wait a minute. We didn't even talk Oprah. Oh, that's politics. Sorry. I can't talk
James Franco.
And you get a new car.
Yeah.
And you get a tax break. And you get a tax break. And you get a tax break.
Just put your loving arms around me, Oprah.
Smother I'm kind of over her.
People love her, and I get that.
I love her
and
so much.
She's been a big part of a lot of people's lives. I don't get it. I don't
like 40
down on her, but it's not my thing.
If she were Republican, I would like, if she were saying the book to read, the next book, you know, on the Oprah thing, if she had a show and she said, I'm going to introduce you to Professor Hayek, okay? And this book, Road to Serfdom. Oh, it was lovely. I had an aha moment. If she said that, I would be on the floor, like, you know, wiggling like a puppy, like so many people wiggled in my business when Barack Obama came out of the state Senate with Tony Rezko still on his shoulders and became a god.
Yeah. Oh, John Cass wiggling like a puppy. That's a great visual. I like her, and I understand her inspiration, and I really do think she's the American story. I just feel like she's oversaturated. To me, that was the moment when I was watching the speech, was a lot of cliches. It didn't move me. You know, I was ready to be moved.
I was so moved by that. Come on.
You had the little tingle go up your leg?
No, I didn't. But I did realize that if she wants a Democratic nomination, there's no way they can stop her.
Oh, yeah.
By
definition alone, woman, African-American, great, charismatic.
Do you remember when...
Bye, Bernie.
I'm sure you heard this story, too, because you were You might have. No, you weren't covering City Hall. You were running your column. Sorry. See, I need the garlic. Yeah. I need the garlic.
So you were asking for a friend.
Ginkgo Provera or whatever.
Ginkgo Bibola.
The contingent of Chicagoans went. Where did they have the Olympics announcement where we lost in the first round?
Daily Center.
Well,
they were in Europe somewhere.
They were in Europe, but they made the announcement in Chicago. I was there wearing my chalky Olympic shirt, showing the Olympic, like a homicide chalky.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Holding Olympic torch, dead on the ground with 2016. Some coppers made it. It was so
that's funny.
Bleeping awesome.
But people, it was a huge group from Chicago who went overseas. And I heard from so many of them when they came back that Oprah was part of the group. She was the only person. I mean, it didn't matter. I have the sense that they were all over the globe, but that wouldn't make sense. But they were in
like Davos,
rural areas where, you know, everybody knows Oprah. Everyone gravitates towards Oprah. So you're right. If she wants the nomination, it's hers. But I hope we steer back toward a more serious policy driven president the next time around. And I don't think she's it.
That'll be in 2020, because I don't think Trump will be around.
You don't think he'll be around?
I think he'll be primaried out, and I think people are going to have Trump fatigue. They just do. It's not that the policies are particularly terrible. I like Gorsuch. Mm-hmm. I like conservative judges. It's just that this constant nonsense with his mouth and his thumbs, you know, it's just making people tired, and they don't want to be tired. They want to deal with what you want to deal with, which is, what other board games did you play with?
Nice pivot. That is the starkest pivot I've ever seen.
But I mean, just thinking of a family sitting around playing board games, something not done in the time of, you know, when boys are 10, they get their Xbox and they go to war.
Copenhagen, right. That's where that what took place, by the
way. Okay, thank you. Well,
Olympic loss announcement was.
You know what I feel like? I'm a little thirsty, Jeff. And I didn't get my water. Jeff brings us water.
Oh, right.
That's right.
But I need some water. You know that special kind?
Here, open your mouth. Here's some glass cleaner.
Glass cleaner.
I'll just
water
squirt it over there.
Where's that special water, Jeff?
Raw water. Yeah.
What's that?
So there's a trend that started in of all places where these types of trends tend to start, California, and it's where people are drinking.
She's Googling.
Raw water. So people will pay upwards of $37 for like a jug of water that's been sourced from some sort of natural or pond, spring, who knows.
Okay.
No treatment. There's no purifying or filtering.
They're stupid.
And people say it's healthy for you because it's more natural. Let's get back to your ancestral roots with raw water.
What nonsense.
Yeah.
So they pay $37 for like a quart of this stuff?
Yep.
And it comes out of a tap, right? Some guy named Joe.
Right.
Joe and Lou have the tap water and they're just moving it, right?
The average price, I think, right now is about, I've seen people are saying $15 a gallon for raw water.
Get on a plane.
Crazy. I mean, you know, so I visited a friend in Colorado years ago and we went on this hike and there are just these streams. They look delightful. And I leaned down to scoop up some in my thermos and she said, don't do that.
Beaver fever?
No, it's just, it's not healthy. It's full of a bacteria that your body isn't used to. And I mean, we still, as tight as our environmental standards are here, that's where that's where our sewage goes, is into streams and into, you know, the treatment plants and corporations like BP who discharge. That's where they discharge into streams. So I don't think raw water's for me.
The word of the day, yes, it is for you. And what I want you all to do is get on a plane, come with me. Maybe this summer I'll go back to Greece. In our village called Rizes, the root of the mountain. You go up the mountain, there's a monastery. Behind the monastery, an old one, it's closed now, there is a spring.
Mm-hmm.
You just turn a faucet in a flat rock on the side of the hill. And fresh, clean water, underground spring comes out. It is the best water, and nobody charges you $37. You just go up there and turn it off when you're done. There's nothing like fresh mountain water. And it doesn't, it's not exposed. Mm-hmm. It's not like going through
right, exactly.
where beavers can go, you know, poo-poo in the thing and make
sure.
you sick. You know?
How just, dare you speak of beavers in that way?
That's what's called beaver fever.
Beavers do their business privately and cleanly.
So that, let me
in
tell
their
you,
little dams.
I got a beaver story. So my cousin Vasily.
Oh, boy.
My cousin Vasily and I and my brothers went up to Canada one year to fish. And
back to your home country?
To my, yeah, my because I'm half
Canadian.
Yeah. And we went up there, and he wouldn't drink the water, poor guy, because he was worried about beaver fevers.
So that's actually a thing. I'm making fun of you, but it's actually a real concern.
It is, because you can get a fever from beaver fever. And don't use that as a promo.
I've heard of beaver fever in a different way.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's on the adult channel somewhere.
That was
It's Chronicles of Narnia, the second one, with the nice beavers, and they make tea. So stop it. They make tea. Oh, and they speak like sort of like
beaver
lower
fever.
Middle class Englishmen.
Is it the most I've ever heard beaver fever said?
You know, that's what it is. I have nothing further to add except to say I don't know what to add now.
See, he does need the garlic. I'm going to head down to interview my next candidate.
How's that going, by the way? Because I have to know. People are calling me, okay? Because they know, like, do you know so-and-so? Do you know so-and-so? Like, check this out. Calls from prospective candidates and calls from incumbents. And they're like, I've got an interview with so-and-so. On the board, because the board, there's, I think, several people on the Tribune editorial board are doing candidate interviews. Mm-hmm. And they're like, what are they, what can you tell me? I said, I can't tell you anything. I said, Google it, look at their background, read their stuff, and figure out where their mindset is. But don't ask me, like, what am I going to, is this like some Chicago way thing?
Are they asking? Well, I mean, I could see if they were asking you about other people, but if they're asking you about me,
I didn't say who.
I know you didn't, but now I want you to tell me.
Well, people have asked. I've got to go into secret. People have asked about that. They've asked about others, and I just say, read what they write. Don't ask me to. I'm not interceding here. This is. I'm not like you know. Oh, I can swing. This is not that kind of deal. This is the Tribune editorial board, my friend. This is like, I don't know, like say, you know, like the name of the rose when Sean Connery went to, and there was the Inquisition and all that, and he had to make the speech about, I don't know, whatever the big speech was, academic gathering of the clerics. That's what this is. It's a very important thing.
I would not say that.
How much research do you do?
I do quite a bit. I do as much as I can. I looked at my board, and I'm interviewing about 150 people between now and mid-February. So it has to be efficient.
Yeah.
But we send out a survey. I look at their campaign finance disclosure forms. I look at their social media.
What tricks do they try to do?
Ingratiating,
endearing little things that they try to do?
I wouldn't say that there's too many tricks. I think there are some candidates downstate who won't even talk to me or won't talk to the Tribune because we're part of Chicago, and they feed off of that anti-Chicago. They don't want the Chicago Tribune endorsement, so that's fine. I get that it's like political, not personal. There are some people, one person I interviewed recently sort of gave away that the Democratic Party and the Republicans do this too, give them all these talking points and actually answer the questions for them. And we've had surveys come in where, oh, this candidate and this candidate have exactly the same answer.
What?
That's strange.
No.
Like, don't you want Madigan's guys to actually sign their names to those or a little
emotional? Well, the Republicans do it too.
Yes, they do.
And it's not a big deal. I know these candidates get 20 different surveys and, you know, it's not a big deal. But
can anyone sway you? Like, say you're the not you because it's not you, it's the board that makes the decision, right?
Yeah, I mean because I'm interviewing them, I think my recommendation carries a lot of weight, but yes, it's the board. I'll bring my recommendation to the board. And we get this question a lot. Your listeners will appreciate this because I hear from them. Why do we even bother endorsing Democrats, especially for state house seats?
Yes, I would like to ask that question too. Because you should not.
Well, it doesn't work that way because, first of all, in a primary, we have to, if there are multiple Democrats, we have to pick one. And also, even in general elections, we still look for independent thought, people who are passionate about their policy. And we also understand that there are parts of the city that are just, there's not a Republican running in a lot of these seats, or there's not a Republican running who is any better than the Democrat.
I were in Alabama right now, talking to the Christian McQuarrie of Alabama, and I'm the John Cass of Alabama, although I don't know why a Greek and an Irishman would be even in any position of discussion there. But if I were, mm-hmm. and as a Republican state, I'd say the same thing about the other party. But in this state, the Democrats run it, and if any vote for a Democratic state legislator is a vote for Mike Madigan to continue to feed on the blood of the millennials. Come on.
I hear you. I mean, we've had these discussions on the board, but there are, I'm just not going to be naive about it. There are good Democrats. There are Democrats who push for criminal justice reform and, you know, I want independent thinking Democrats in Mike Madigan's caucus. And so that's kind of what we look for. And it's not, you know, an endorsement is often weighing two people. And I'm not going to endorse someone who's not up to the job or hasn't done their homework or doesn't know policy. I'm just not going to do that just because they have an R next to their name.
What a great insight into the workings of the Tribune. The last editorial session, or one of the last few, in the Gothic Tribune Tower. So it must be great to look up and see the flying buttresses, and then they meet Christian McQuarrie. Thanks, Christian.
Thanks for having me.
For Christian McQuarrie, columnist for the Chicago Tribune and editorial board member, telling us the secrets of the editorial political process. And for Jeff Carlin, WGN AM producer par excellence. For John Cass, the lonely conservative in the deep blue sea of Chicago and Illinois. And a special thank you to a dear friend, departed, one who was important to WGN, but more important to Chicago and the world, to me, one of the great broadcasters of our history, and host of the most literate and smartest show in the world, Extension 720 on WGN, Milt Rosenberg. God bless you.